In 2018, we covered the case of Pam Lanier on the podcast. Pam and her husband Dorian were turkey farmers in Chincapin, North Carolina, a small crossroads community of about 2,000 residents. Back in August 1997, Dorian injured his leg when he was using his bulldozer to clear farmland. Pam then began caring for Dorian, who is stubborn and refused to see a doctor. Soon, Dorian's physical and mental health started taking a turn for the worse, with Dorian eventually passing away on the night of November 19, 1997. An autopsy eventually revealed that Dorian had lethal levels of arsenic in his system, which led to suspicion that Pam had been fatally poisoning her husband. That said, there wasn't really any evidence that Pam had poisoned her husband, but her first husband had also met an unexpected demise. Specifically, Pam and her first husband, Johnny Ray, lived on Topsail Island on the North Carolina coast back in 1991. But one night in September, Johnny Ray fell into the intracoastal waterway while checking crab pots and fatally drowned. Now, the state had no evidence that Pam had poisoned Johnny Ray, but he was in kind of a fugue state in the days before his accident, somewhat similar to the brain fog that had clouded Dorian's judgment. And so, Pam was charged with Dorian's murder, with the state noting its intention to present evidence of Johnny Ray's drowning under the doctrine of chances. This is an evidentiary doctrine that allows the state to present evidence of similar tragedies at trial without any evidence of wrongdoing and simply asking the jury, what are the odds that in this case, an innocent wife would have two separate husbands die under suspicious circumstances? As you might imagine, this wasn't the strongest case in the world. As a result, the state offered Pam a pretty sweet plea deal pre-trial. If Pam pleaded guilty to involuntary manslaughter, she would get only 20 months in prison. Pam rejected the deal. Then, mid-trial, the prosecution sweetened the pot. If Pam pleaded guilty to involuntary manslaughter, she would get between 16 and 20 months in prison, which she could serve on weekends, leaving her free to live and work during the week. And the plea deal made clear that this charge was based solely on not seeking medical attention for Dorian, not based upon actively causing his death. Pam again turned down the deal. Ultimately, the jury found Pam guilty of first-degree murder, and she was sentenced to life imprisonment without the possibility of parole. She's now been behind bars for the past 26 years. But if you listen to our series on Pam's case, you know what our joint investigation with the team at Wake Forest uncovered and reported. Here are excerpts from the summary of argument in Pam's current motion for appropriate relief.
"Whitey, I messed myself up," said Ivy Dorian Lanier Sr. to his father-in-law on the night of November 17, 1997. "Whitey, everything's all right now. I love you. What's done, I've done it to myself." Dorian Lanier was on a gurney in the emergency room at Duplin General Hospital in Cannonsville, North Carolina, as he and Whitey Sanders prayed together. 2 hours later, Mr. Lanier died due to poisoning by arsenic. What Mr. Lanier, a turkey farmer, was talking about that night was that he had been drinking from a hose connected to a drum of water mixed with 3-nitro, a medicinal compound for poultry that contained arsenic. He had been self-medicating by drinking that 3-nitro water. "If it don't hurt the turkeys, it won't hurt me," Mr. Lanier had told his father-in-law earlier. He was also injecting himself with animal medicine, eating fly bait and rat poison, and taking old prescription medicines in the months before he died. He did not trust physicians. Drinking 3-nitro water and taking animal medications were his ways of taking care of himself for a leg injury from a bulldozer accident in late August 1997. According to his best friend, quote, "You couldn't get him to go to the doctor when he was, before all this happened. He didn't believe in doctors, sir. He didn't believe in doctors. I'll tell you that." Mrs. Lanier and her attorneys believed that Dorian drinking the water mixed with 3-nitro was the source of the arsenic that killed her husband. However, the defense toxicologist and pathologist, in keeping with the scientific understanding of the time, said that the organic form of arsenic in 3-nitro as mixed into the water for the turkeys was not lethal to humans. 2 decades later, the FDA would ban 3-nitro. The organic arsenic in 3-nitro is, in fact, toxic to humans. Contrary to scientific understanding at the time, 5 research scientists and 2 forensic pathologists now say that Dorian Lanier's self-ingestion of water mixed with 3-nitro is consistent with his cause of death. Medical experts now also explain the circumstances of the prior husband's death. He suffered from undiagnosed antihistamine Benadryl overuse, a condition that caused confusion, imbalance, hallucinations, and sky-high blood pressure, a condition that likely led to his fall from a dock into the shallow water of the canal behind his home at midnight. And a water safety expert now explains that nearly half of all drownings are in shallow water, even if the person was an excellent swimmer, especially if that person was impaired. The new scientific and medical evidence completely contradicts the prosecution narrative at the 2001 trial. The science now matches the evidence that Dorian Lanier's drinking the 3-nitro water is consistent with causing his accidental death. Mr. Lanier's death was a tragedy, not a crime. The wrongful murder conviction of Pam Lanier must be set aside.
As noted, the summary of argument comes from Pam's motion for appropriate relief, the way to seek a new trial in North Carolina. After years of waiting, a hearing on this motion will finally take place on August 25th at 2 p.m. in Goldsboro, North Carolina, for anyone who wants to attend. Much of what we present at this hearing is testimony by 3-nitro experts, many of whom you first heard from back on our podcast. In a certain sense, this hearing will be the fulfillment of the dream I had all the way back in 2018.
What about the leading experts on 3-nitro? What if they could be brought together as a sort of Justice League to offer expert opinions about whether drinking the turkey water could have caused Dorian's death? When I called them up, they had a similar thought.
Well, I wonder if there's any need or any thought that's sort of bringing together a group of persons like you and me who would be expert witnesses in certain topics and very interested in helping. If that's something the project would think about, I think we'd be most interested in working on that.
Oh, we'd really appreciate it. Yeah, if down the road an affidavit or testimony could be provided, that would be fantastic.
That's Ellen Silbergeld, a professor of environmental health and engineering at Johns Hopkins. Back in the mid-2000s, she and her research assistant, Keith Nachman, now himself a professor at Johns Hopkins, started looking at the public health risks associated with the use of certain animal feeds and medications.
Of course, every superhero needs a good origin story, and Dr. Silbergeld certainly had one.
At this point, they didn't even know that there was arsenic in turkey medications.
We had published some papers on the variety of things that are used in animal feeds and how these might not be so good. And there was some response to our research from the National Poultry Council, where they said that poultry is completely safe, there's no problem. And they went on to say, it's not as if we feed them arsenic, which struck me as such a strange thing to say that I said to one of my students, would you find out about this? And he came back and said, they do feed them arsenic. I love this industry, right? We are their own worst enemies.
Now, simply saying that 3-nitro had arsenic is one thing, but saying that the amount of 3-nitro that Dorian was ingesting was enough to cause his death is another. But that's exactly what I set out to do. Specifically, I sent several experts evidence regarding how much 3-nitro Dorian would have been ingesting so that they could reach very specific conclusions regarding whether it would have caused his death. Here were the responses by Dr. Aaron Brokowski of Pitt, as well as Dr. Silbergeld and Nachman, who were mentioned earlier.
A lingering question is how much 3-nitro Dorn was ingesting. So Colin sent Dr. Berchowski testimony about how Dorn would dilute the 3-nitro into water to see if he could give him a more concrete conclusion.
I gave you the testimony, which at least informally was describing how much 3-nitro he would mix with how much water to then deliver that to the turkeys. And then the son was testifying that he would see him not use the bypass valve and drinking the yellow water from the hose. Do you have any conclusions you can draw from that if he was, you know, on a fairly regular basis drinking the water from the hose without using the bypass valve?
I would imagine that he was getting a substantial amount of both inorganic and rock tar sun.
And based upon the lethal dosage of arsenic that could take someone's life, would that be consistent with him possibly ingesting a lethal dose?
I would think so, yes. The chronic poisoning at that level, it could be quite substantial.
Colin gave the same information to Dr. Silbergeld and Nachman, and here was their conclusion.
But I mean, the key question for us is it plausible that Rostersohn caused what we see, right? So, I mean, no one's arguing arsenic was responsible. I think it's just, is it possible that this form of arsenic through the consumption of this product is what did it, right?
Right.
Okay.
And I would say, as some other information, this would seem to be the major cause.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, when you see the liver failure and that the immediate cause of death was cardiorespiratory arrest, I mean, that's pretty telling.
And they also had a secondary conclusion.
Yeah, I mean, I think to us it's amazing why anybody would look beyond these accounts of his self-administration of arsenic to somehow think that some other person had deliberately poisoned him.
Yeah, I agree.
All three of these experts have now written affidavits in support of Pam's motion, as have two other experts we presented on the podcast, Dr. Partha Basu and Dr. John Stolz. So is Dr. John Fleetmeyer, a drowning expert we also presented in the podcast, and who you'll hear from in our new upcoming series starting in September. If you're interested in hearing everything these experts had to say, they're all in episode 4 of our Pam Lanier series.
Hey, Undisclosed listeners, we are going to take a quick ad break, and I just want to explain something to you about why it's so important for you guys to support our sponsors. You might not know this, but all these years, all the work we have done for all of the defendants whose cases we reinvestigate and cover has been pro bono. We don't charge them or their families or their lawyers a dime. And the only way we can afford to do this, which this is work that would ordinarily cost a defendant hundreds of thousands of dollars, the only way we can afford to do this is because of our sponsors. So we are so grateful to our sponsors, and we are grateful to all of you. If you want to know what you can do to help support our work, support our sponsors. Thank you so much. I cannot believe that summer is almost over, but I cannot lie. I am looking forward to those crisp, cool autumn days and nights. And as summer winds down, I'm also looking forward to refreshing my wardrobe a bit and buying some new pieces for the fall. You know, we all love getting some comfy, cozy wear every fall. I have a ritual where I buy new pairs of fuzzy socks every single fall and wear them all through the cold season. But also part of my ritual is getting a few new staples from Quince, because Quince nails it with the luxe essentials that feel effortless and look so polished, perfect for layering and mixing and looking super chic in the fall. Their styles are so versatile, I find myself reaching for them again and again. And they're so affordable. I'm talking about cashmere and cotton sweaters starting at just $40, washable silk tops, classic denim pants. These are timeless pieces that you are going to keep coming back to and keep in your wardrobe for years. And the best part is that everything with Quince is half the cost of similar brands and qualities. That's because Quince works directly with top artisans and they cut out the middlemen. That's why Quince can give you luxury without the markup. And also, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes. I've got my eye on their 100% organic denim overalls. They've got them in three beautiful classic colors, denim, black, and the one I'm going to get, which is off-white, because that paired with Quince's 100% leather cropped zip front jacket in a chocolate brown, oh my gosh, I'm going to be looking super fly this fall. Also, by the way, Quince items, whether it's the bedding, the luggage, the clothing, the accessories, make beautiful gifts. They are so gorgeously tailored that your friends are going to think you spent a fortune on them. So, like me, you can elevate your fall wardrobe or the fall wardrobe of a friend with Quince. Just go to quince.com/towardjustice for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/towardjustice to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/towardjustice.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
So what can we expect to happen at Pam's hearing? I recently did a phone call with Pam's attorney, Mark Rabel, the director of Innocence and Justice Clinic at Wake Forest University School of Law.
Yeah, okay, so let me get started. And to remind our listeners, this is the case of Pam Lanier, and Pam and her husband, Doran, are turkey farmers in eastern North Carolina, right? And then Doran has an incident with a tractor, and his health starts declining.
That's right. And he has an injury to his leg, and he's reluctant to go to the doctor for it. And it's during that period of time, the end of August, beginning of September of 1997. But anyway, he starts doing what he would usually do throughout his life, which would be taking farm animal remedies. So he would drink this mixture of chemicals that were for the turkeys. A chemical called 3-nitro was put into the water, and it was had been approved for many years to prevent dysentery in poultry and also to promote large breasts for consumption by Americans. But it unfortunately had arsenic in it, and there's no question. 8 people testified that they saw him drinking from the hose connected to this vat of water. They could see the greenish tint to it, and he would drink this and hope that it would make him better. But unfortunately, it was slowly killing him. And then when he died, naturally, the autopsy report showed arsenic poisoning. The question then was, who did it? Did he do it to himself, or did somebody poison him? And despite the fact that there was absolutely no evidence that Pam Lanier gave her husband, Dorn, any arsenic, she was charged with it for very crazy reasons. Number one, the fact that she was his wife meant that she could inherit from him. And number two, she had a prior husband, Johnny Williams, who fell off a dock and drowned in the water. And that was determined to be a mysterious death, so the court and the Attorney General's office applied the so-called doctrine of chances to say, so what are the chances that one woman could lose two husbands under mysterious circumstances? And so she was convicted of first-degree murder and nearly given the death penalty. So there was a lot of mess, as I would call it, thrown into her jury trial. Questions about a prior husband, really largely that was uninvestigated. Why did he die? I mean, we now know that he was drinking a lot and trying to stop drinking and taking a lot of Benadryl to alleviate the symptoms of alcohol withdrawal, and basically had a type of toxic consumption of this Benadryl that showed up in the autopsy that or at least is in the records that our doctors have found. So that mystery is solved. So the Dr. Machances shouldn't even have applied. The first mystery solved. He died of consumption of Benadryl. And the second mystery, how did Dorn die? Well, he continued to drink this turkey water. Now,
right.
At the time, as you'll recall from, before, the defense attorneys were trying everything they could to support this defense, but their experts, one who was a top in the nation arsenic toxicologist, said, well, the type of arsenic in the turkey water was mostly organic, and that does not break down. And so we cannot support your defense of how Dorn did this to himself.
Right.
And so they didn't have any experts to support him. So basically, without any support, the Attorney General's office was basically able to ridicule the defense, saying, well, if the turkeys aren't dead, then it's totally inconsistent with Dorn drinking this stuff and killing himself. And of course, we now know from the experts you've heard on prior episodes that that's been determined to be not true, that it's very likely that the reason he died was consuming the water with 3-nitro in it.
Right. And so all of this has led to you filing an MAR, a motion for appropriate relief, in North Carolina. And there were two grounds. One, which you were just discussing a bit, was the findings about arsenic in the 3-nitro. The other is going back to Johnny, and this is something the court, I guess, is not hearing in the Doctrine of Chances. And this was not aired in the podcast because you discovered this after the podcast, right? When Johnny's body was exhumed, as reported, what does the report say about arsenic in his system?
So the doctors concluded from Johnny's autopsy, which was 7 years after he died, that he had just a minuscule amount of arsenic, which is the type of amount that you would get, say, if you ate a lot of shellfish or something like that. But it was nowhere near any toxic level. And normally in arsenic poisoning cases, the state does go back and exhume prior husbands, prior boyfriends, that sort of thing, as in, say, the Blanche Taylor Moore case, where they exhumed, a number of people, and they all had high, high levels of arsenic. And Dorn had very high levels. But so the local district attorney decided not to pursue the case. They turned it over to the attorney general's office, and they pursued it anyway, even though he did not die of arsenic.
Right. And my understanding, if I'm remembering correctly, is that one of the numbers of arsenic reported in Johnny was actually a mistake that they had transposed from Dorn's autopsy. Is that right?
There was some confusion with some of the arsenic numbers. And yeah, that actually was confused in the trial transcript. And I know you've read this trial transcript, Colin, and it is a very confusing transcript to read, because they're continually stopping the trial to have these outside the presence of the jury hearings on whether this is admissible, whether that's admissible. And it's just a mess to try to wade through that. I mean, I basically, for myself, to just read that transcript, I just had to go away. I just went to the Outer Banks and took this transcript and sat with it for a week and just made notes and studied it to try to get an understanding of what that jury actually heard. It was a mess of a trial.
And part of it being a mess is that Pam, during the trial itself, was offered a very favorable plea deal that she rejected, right?
She rejected a plea deal which would basically have let her plead guilty to something like involuntary manslaughter, which is like a carelessness, recklessness standard. And she would have done essentially no time, maybe some weekends in jail. But this is a case where you got to remember, the state of North Carolina, through the Attorney General's office, is seeking the death penalty, which normally means they have to have the utmost confidence in their case. To go for the death penalty, the DA, the state, usually is very confident, in fact, overconfident. And there's no, I mean, I've done a lot of death penalty cases, and you never see, or hardly ever see, the prosecutor offer involuntary manslaughter for someone to get out from under the death penalty. That just hardly ever happens. The only time it ever happens is if they think they're innocent and they're trying to save face. So somehow the Attorney General's office, Mr. Bowman and Mr. Murphy, who were assigned to the case, realized that there was something very wrong with their case, and they were afraid they were going to lose. So they offered involuntary manslaughter. And Pam's lawyers actually tried to get her to take the deal. Mm-hmm. I mean, if I were one of her lawyers at the time, I might have tried to get her to take the deal, because in the death penalty system, everything is against you. You're going to get a jury that is conviction prone because they all believe in the death penalty. And, you know, that just takes away a lot of people from a cross section of the community. So everything stacked against you. And with everything they were throwing at her, it was a high risk, you know, that she was going to be convicted. So it was an amazing offer. And I totally understand why the lawyers were really kind of angry and frustrated with Pam for not taking such a deal.
Yeah. And so going back to the point about the prosecutors making this offer because they likely recognize there was something very wrong with the case. As we noted, you've now filed this motion for appropriate relief, an MAR, in North Carolina. And so what is an MAR and what is the burden of proof that the defendant has?
A motion for appropriate relief is something you file after you've lost all your appeals and you discover new evidence or you discover new violations of, you know, the Constitution. So we filed this right at the very beginning of the few months to the beginning of the pandemic in 2020. We filed it right at the end of June 2020, just over 5 years ago. And we had a number of claims in there. It's the longest post-conviction motion I've ever written. I think it was 150 pages long, with a number of claims, including this new evidence about organic arsenic, ineffective assistance of counsel with regard to not investigating Johnny's death, constitutional violations, and a number of different claims. And the judge at the time, it was Judge Bland, who was the Superior Court judge in charge of the case. He had a hearing. I thought it was just a status hearing in January of 2022, but he ended up surprisingly dismissing all of the claims except for newly discovered evidence, scheduled a hearing for June of 2022. Then I caught COVID, had to get a continuance. And for the last 3 years, we just haven't not been able to get the thing rescheduled. So finally, a new judge was elected. The other judge retired. And Judge Strickland has scheduled an evidentiary hearing for the week of August 25th. So it'll start on the afternoon of August 25th, and he's made it very clear that he wants it to go quickly. So, you know, hopefully we'll get our evidence in about a day and a half, and then the state will have their experts.
Right, and so this is August 25th, 2025. You're finally going to have the hearing on the motion for appropriate relief, and some of the experts that listeners heard from on the podcast are going to testify, or at least their affidavits are in the record. You've summoned your own experts to speak to this issue. What ultimately do you have to convince the judge of at this hearing in order for her conviction to be reversed?
So when we file a post-conviction motion in North Carolina, and really pretty much it's standard everywhere, the burden of proof shifts to the defendant, Mrs. Lanier, to her attorneys, to prove by the greater weight of the evidence that there is newly discovered evidence that was not available at the time, that couldn't have been discovered with reasonable diligence, that is probably true, and that would most likely result in a different result if the evidence had been presented. So that's the burden of proof. And so it's on us to prove through experts that this is a new understanding of organic arsenic, and that it's now understood that, yes, through the delivery system, through drinking this mixed in water, a human can suffer and die. And by the way, humans, we now know, I mean, we've really known for a long time that humans metabolize chemicals differently from poultry. Mm-hmm. So, for the, you know, so the argument they were making, well, it would have killed the turkeys. Well, no, birds can, and poultry can handle all sorts of different things that humans can't. So that's, you know, an interesting development. In fact, you know, as you found out from talking to the scientists who got this product taken off the market in like 2014 or 15, mm-hmm. through the FDA, this product, 3-nitro with the organic arsenic, Some of these scientists who spent a lot of time studying it actually now say that organic arsenic is more lethal than the pure form of inorganic arsenic.
Right.
Because it metabolizes better, so to speak. It's a better delivery system to get the arsenic into your body. And so it's actually more dangerous, more lethal than they even thought. And there's even been, Colin, a new study that came out in January of this year that goes into some of the cardiovascular implications from arsenic that was not, you know, understood as well as it is now. So the science with arsenic is constantly evolving. And it'd be a totally different case now. I mean, and that's the point we have to make to this judge. This is a totally different case in light of science than it was when this case was tried 25 years ago.
Yeah, and my recollection from speaking to some of the experts is even beyond just the question of, can this cause death? And I think the answer is clear that it can, but that they did some calculations looking at the numbers, the half-life, etc. And is your expectation that at least some of the testimony or evidence you'll present will be saying the amount of arsenic in Doran's system is fully consistent with a reasonable amount that he might have ingested as a hangover medication?
Yes, and the point, too, is that there's a, as you know from before, Dr. Nachman did these calculations, and we got him to put all that in the chart in the affidavit, and he calculated based on different delivery systems because the evidence was somewhat, you know, unclear at times. Did he have a tank? Did he have a pump system? And how much did he actually put in? Did he follow the directions? Hard to believe a guy who would actually drink this stuff would read or follow the directions. So it's somewhat unknown as to how much he put in, but, you know, based on if you follow the directions, if you don't follow the directions, drinking water with 3-nitro in it is going to have a cumulative effect that leads to the type of death that Doran Lanier suffered in November of 1997.
Right. Is Pam going to be at the hearing, or is this just going to be the attorneys?
No, Pam has an absolute right to be there. She will be there. And I just want to say, too, that this poor lady has suffered really intolerably throughout the course of this. I mean, here she is, a completely innocent woman, 25 years nearly of incarceration, zero infractions in the prison system. I never, ever hear of a person with zero infractions. I mean, it's like you just can't even do that and be in prison. So she's an incredible individual. Unfortunately, she suffered a really bad heart attack last fall.
Right.
And had to be taken out to the hospital, you know, independent hospitals. And she's just, you know, had difficulty physically ever since. And then about a month ago or less, her elderly father, Whitey Sanders, passed away. And, you know, that's something that she always wanted to get out of prison so she could be there and take care of him. So it's been a devastating year. It's been hard for her to wait. And we've done everything we could to get this before a judge, but it's just taken this long. It's just really exacted its toll on her. So it's just been really hard on her.
And I know you mentioned in terms of Pam's health condition that obviously we'd love for this motion for appropriate relief to succeed and her conviction to be thrown out. You mentioned the possibility that there might be other options to get her out based upon her health, some type of compassionate release. Could you maybe go into a little bit of details of how that might be accomplished?
Well, in terms of, say, going through the state or the parole commission to get compassionate release, that's not a possibility because when you're convicted of murder, compassionate release doesn't apply in North Carolina. Now, the governor of North Carolina has full powers to do whatever he wants to do. So that it could be a possibility with him, but normally governors don't like to make a ruling or grant clemency in a case when there's a pending, you know, motion in court. Judges want to hear what happens in court. So we need to go through with this before we go to the governor. Now, there is a third possibility. When Pam was convicted, there was a law in place in North Carolina that only lasted for like 4 years. And it was that anybody convicted of first degree murder in this 4-year period had the right to apply to a judge after 25 years for a recommendation to the governor that the person be released. So she's in a very, you know, small, unique class that only a few people convicted of first-degree murder are in this area. So that's another, that's a third possibility. And we, you know, we believe we'll be successful in August with securing a new trial. But if we don't, you know, we're going to go for these other avenues.
Right. Final question I have, obviously you're there in North Carolina. You have, you know, the only of its kind. Other jurisdictions and states have conviction integrity units. North Carolina has the Innocence Inquiry Commission, which I know is kind of on the chopping block there in North Carolina. So, A, is that a potential option if this bid doesn't work? And B, do you know what the status of that commission is and the likelihood that it'll persist as opposed to being cut?
Yeah, so to answer the question about the future of the Innocence Commission, it looks like it's safe right now. Mm-hmm. What happened was it was taken out of the budget. In other words, it wasn't abolished. It's just they said, we are not going to fund, the Senate said, we're not going to fund the Innocence Commission. And it was basically because the District Attorneys Association of North Carolina went to some senators and convinced them to put this or to take this out of the budget for no good reason other than prosecutors don't like to revisit cases from the past. And that shows you what a good job the Innocence Commission has been doing if it aggravates the district attorneys to that point. Now, fortunately, people in the House of Representatives in North Carolina were sort of miffed at this because, you know, in North Carolina, we have a Republican-controlled legislature. Well, the Innocence Commission was actually created by the Republicans, by Chief Justice Lake, who was a very conservative Republican Supreme Court Chief Justice years ago, and he got the legislature to create this to save face for a system which was dealing with a number of wrongful convictions, you know, in the late 90s, early 2000s. So it's a measure created by conservatives. So the House, the people in the House were sort of miffed by that. Could we go to the Innocence Commission? It's a possibility, but in terms of does the evidence by the great, it's a much higher burden. Hmm. So even if you get through the commission, you'd end up with a three-judge panel, and the burden is on the defendant there to prove by a much higher burden, clear and convincing evidence of actual innocence.
Right.
And so we believe right now that, you know, we have the evidence to show, you know, by a preponderance, the evidence that a new trial would be, or that a different result would be reached in a new trial. So we're going before one judge right now. It doesn't, you know, something else new comes up later. It's always a possibility, but it's a great process, the Innocence Commission, but it's also really, really difficult to actually succeed. Now, they've been successful and exonerated like 16 people.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it can be done, but usually it's like, you know, you have DNA and a confession.
Right.
Very clear scientific evidence. Our evidence is very strong and it supports the defense and I think shows innocence, but I guess as lawyers, we feel like we should go for the forum that has the lower burden of proof to be safe.
Yeah. And that kind of gets this recurring theme with wrongful convictions for women is that a large majority of them are these sort of no crime convictions where that's certainly what our belief is here. There was no crime that actually occurred. And so that's tougher to prove innocence than when you actually have a different person who committed the crime.
That's exactly right. I mean, the statistics actually absolutely show that when women are exonerated, most of the time they're exonerated of a situation that was not even a crime.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we see that a lot with the shaken baby syndrome cases, which is not a real syndrome. It's just something prosecutors argue and certain doctors support. So a lot of women that have been convicted of things like that. Pam's case, it's an accidental poisoning at her husband's own hand, unfortunately, and it's not a crime. It's just, you know, it's a tragedy. So, you know, it's not like we're going to, I mean, I think we have solved the crime because all these people testified that they saw him drink the water with the 3-nitro in it, and then he died from arsenic poisoning. I mean, it's, to me, it's as clear as a bell. And now the science has evolved to the point where it can support that defense. Before, there were zero experts who were able to support her defense, and that, and now we, you know, we have, you know, 6-7 experts.
Yeah. Well, thanks so much for taking time to speak with me. Any final thoughts? We're about a month-ish out from the hearing. Any final thoughts as you're gearing up to present this case in court?
Well, we're number one for Pam. We're just really glad we're getting into court. I'm very, very sorry for Pam that it's taken so long and that her father's passed away. She was very close to him. So even if she gets out, it's still tragic. She's lost 25 years, you know, of her life. She wasn't able to be there when her grandchildren were born. She hadn't been able to be there for son, her daughter. And it's just really tragic. But we do believe that, you know, we have a strong case and we should be victorious in securing a new trial. And I can't imagine if we win a new trial that they would, that the state would be able to re-prosecute given, right, given the evidence now. It's just not the same. It was wrong to prosecute her then, and it would be even more wrong to prosecute her in the future.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Lowe's knows that no matter your paint project, saving is at the top of your list. That's why when you shop today, you can buy one, get one free select Valspar and HGTV Home by Sherwin-Williams one coat coverage interior paints via rebate. Shop these deals in-store or online today at Lowe's. We help, you save. Selection varies by location while supplies last. Discount taken at time of purchase. See sales associate for details. Offer valid 8/21 through 9/3.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Labor Day Sale and get 35% off paints and stains August 22nd through September 4th. With prices starting at $31.84, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
Pam's case was the first case we covered involving a wrongfully convicted woman, but it won't be the last. Starting in September, we'll do a deep dive series into a case involving another wrongfully convicted woman. And as we previewed earlier in the episode, this case centered around a drowning.
911.
I need an ambulance, please.
911.
I need an ambulance.
What's wrong, ma'am?
My daughter fell in the pool and she's not breathing.
Next time on Undisclosed.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
If you're shopping while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast, then you know and love the thrill of a deal. But are you getting the deal and cash back? Rakuten shoppers do. They get the brands they love, savings, and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Target, Nike, and Instacart. Stack sales on top of cash back and feel what it's like to know you're maximizing the savings. It's easy to use, and you can get your cash back sent to you through PayPal or check. The idea is simple. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back. Download the free Rakuten app or go to Rakuten.com to start saving today. It's the most rewarding way to shop. That's Rakuten, Rakuten.com.
Hey guys, it's Meethal, executive producer of Undisclosed Toward Justice. Want to give a quick shout out to Hannah McCarthy for audio production and Animal Weapon for our theme music. This time around, we're doing something different. You can leave us questions, comments, thoughts, and suggestions in a voice note, and we might even play it on air. Just go to speakpipe.com/undisclosed and start recording. For those of you that want to engage on social media, you can follow, share, and like us on all the different platforms. We're on Instagram and Facebook at Undisclosed Podcast. For folks on X, we're still at Undisclosed Pod. Also, please go to subscribe to our new YouTube channel at Undisclosed Pod so you don't miss out on any content there. Whether you're a new or returning listener, you can check out our previous cases and bonus episodes by going to our revamped website at undisclosedpod.com. If you want to follow Colin and Rabia on social media as well, you can find Rabia at RabiaSquared2 on Instagram, and Colin is at EvidenceProf on Instagram and Blue Sky. Thanks for your continued support for us and for our sponsors. Until next time.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
Do you love true crime podcasts and true crime documentaries?
If so, you gotta check out our podcast, True Crime Obsessed, where we recap the true crime documentaries everybody's watching.
We say everything you're thinking and probably screaming at your TV.
We've been at the top of the podcast charts for almost 9 years, and we have over 400 episodes for you to check out right now.
We cover the cases everyone's talking about, and we also highlight the cases that have been underreported, overlooked, or forgotten.
With over 30,000 five-star reviews on Apple Podcasts, if you've never checked out True Crime Obsessed, now's the time to give us a try.
Find True Crime Obsessed wherever you get your podcasts.